And The Who, It's Not Enough, from the album that comes out at the end of this month, Endless Wire. And Pete Townsend of The Who is on the line with us. And where are you calling from, Pete?
I'm calling from Chicago. We just did a few shows here, and I'm flying in and out on a few shows on to Winnipeg tonight.
Is Chicago a home base for you of sorts these days?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I've got a lot of friends here, and I've always kind of made it a base, so I've built up quite a good bunch of social acquaintances here. My girlfriend Rachel did a show at the House of Blues as well, so we've been doing all kinds of things, having fun.
As a matter of fact, I was listening to a show that you and Rachel do on the internet. It's called In the Attic. It's amazing.
Thank you. It's kind of crazy. It's very informal and very very loose. You can see some of it now. She's got a new website, which is www.intheattic.tv, and you can see some of the samples of the kind of things we do. We're thinking it might one day go to television, but there's also talk of it going out on the new iFilm channel, which is opening in the beginning of November.
I would recommend In the Attic to fans, especially because they get to hear things that you don't ordinarily get to hear Pete play, like Blue, Red, and Gray or Greyhound Girl.
That's right. But, I mean, also, it's an unplugged environment. You know, people that are used to the kind of the fireside music scene in Austin would, you know, really enjoy the whole thing of, if you like Ronnie Lane's kind of music, it's informal and... You know, I often, Rachel's co-host on the show is a guy called Mikey Cuthbert. He's never really ever cracked the big time, but she pulled him out of a flat down in Southend where she grew up. And often his songs remind me just a little bit of Ronnie. So if you're a Ronnie Lane fan, you know, you may just like Mikey Cuthbert.
And we're lucky enough to talk to Pete Townsend today because we're going to talk a little bit about Ronnie Lane, whose DVD documentary, The Passing Show, is coming out later this month. When the Small Faces were around in England, Mr. Townsend, in the mid-60s, and The Who was around, were the two bands peers? Was one more of a mentor to the other? How was that at that time?
I think we were both came from our own place. We were from West London and they were from East London, and we really only met once we'd become successful, and we met at TV shows and radio shows and at gigs, and we immediately got on very, very well. We respected each other, and they were much more lighthearted than The Who. I've always been very, very serious about my work on stage, but off we shared a lot of humor and fun times. But of course, my friendship with Ronnie was a lifetime friendship, and that was almost like meeting, you know, a brother. I know actually a lot of people that met Ronnie felt the same way. He was a very much a universal soldier, so I think, you know, we all felt that we knew him very well. But he was very, very important to me. He helped me a lot in those early days, because we had a lot of fun together. And his girlfriend, who became his first wife, Susan, and my girlfriend, who became my first wife, Karen, they got on very well. So we made a useful foursome. You know, we used to hang out and go and see bands. And those were good days.
What was interesting at the time is you wrote for The Who as a solo person, you know, a Pete Townsend composition, but Ronnie had to work, or he did work, successfully with Steve Marriott, so it was a different kind of thing. Would he ever ask you about writing with different people, or would you ask him what it was like to be in a songwriting team?
I think it was the latter. You know, I've never really ever been able to co-write comfortably. I've done it a few times, but I've never done it the way I've watched other people do it, you know, sitting around, playing, picking up ideas. I suppose for me it's probably about control. It's not, and the control doesn't come from any kind of artistic petulance. It comes from the fact that I usually have a brief before I sit down and write a song. If I don't have a brief, then the song just seems to appear in midair, and when it's done, it's done. When I sit down with somebody else, I find it quite tricky to get past the fact that I feel that there's a kind of negotiation, a creative negotiation going on, which I don't know that I quite got the generosity of spirit to deal with. You know, Ronnie was just extraordinary in that respect. You know, he could work with anyone, and he was so adorable, but, you know, such an underestimated musician in those early days. It's very interesting to watch the Passing Show DVD and realize that, you know, even when he was suffering badly from MS, you know, down in Texas, you guys very, very quickly divined that this was a very, very special folk hero of the English music scene, that he had something very, very special. And I was one of the first people to not to learn that, but to be gifted with that. Ronnie took time out to... He wasn't a real Who fan. He wasn't into really hard rock. He wasn't into the pomp rock that the Who was into. He loved coming around and listening to my demos. He loved coming around and listening to the little things that I did that the Who never recorded. And he encouraged me, and as you know, he was the first guy that ever encouraged me to do a real solo record, which I actually did with him, Rough Mix, in 1976. And prior to that, I just put out a few demos for a thing called Who Came First, which was a thing that, again, Ronnie and I did together. We made an album, or two or three, dedicated, with a bunch of friends, dedicated to the Indian teacher that we followed back in those days, Maya Baba.
We're speaking with Pete Townsend about Ronnie Lane and the forthcoming issue of the Passing Show DVD documentary. There's also Ronnie's first ever American compilation on the way, and that's called Just for a Moment. You mentioned your relationship with Maya Baba, which you and Ronnie shared, and I think the first time any of us in the public heard you together was his song on the Who Came First album, which was known as Evolution or Stone. It was kind of interesting that on your solo album you gave over a track to Ronnie.
Well, that's right, but then what's interesting about that track is it was very much a solo track. We recorded it in my home studio. I felt very much a part of it, and I felt he was very much a part of what I was doing in those days. As I said, you know, it did take... There were a few people. John Sebastian was another one. You know, John Sebastian used to play a lot with Bob Dylan in the early days. You know, he would gaze into Bob Dylan's eyes, I expect, and sing him his latest song. I always found it very hard to do that. And I remember when John Sebastian used to come and hang out with me, and he would gaze into my eyes and try and sing me his latest song. I used to say, John, don't do that. I can't handle it, you know. And with Ronnie, Ronnie's relationship with me was very intimate, very kind, very thoughtful, and very constructive and quite spiritual, I think, in quality. You know, he brought out something in me. He broke me down, I suppose, you know, with his humor. But also, when we did that song, that Evolution song, I was just stunned. What he'd actually done is taken Maya Baba's very, very complicated description of the universe and the way that consciousness travels and grows and evolves through the universe and turned it into a really lighthearted, amusing, and funky song. This is Ronnie's way. He was a real storyteller.
Karmic Evolution in 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, there's a book that Maya Baba wrote called God Speaks, which, you know, some of us try to read and very few of us understand. You know, I think it runs to 300 or 400 pages. You know, Ronnie's song does it better, I think. It really does.
And I would recommend anyone who would like to explore that music further, there's a box set called Avatar, which you can find on Pete's website. We were talking, Pete, about your first full-fledged collaboration with Ronnie Lane, Rough Mix. First of all, is that about to be reissued?
I think it just has. In Europe, it's on SRV, or SPV, I think it is. But over here in the US, it's coming out on Universal. And it's out probably this week or next week. It's not a high-schedule release, but that because all of my solo catalog, which... Universal purchased in from Atlantic, which included the Rough Mix album, has been re-released with extra tracks. And so there are some bonus tracks on there as well. Yes, it's been remastered and spruced up. Not that it needed that. You know, the other thing that's actually happened is that Bob Pridden, with Glyn Johns, the engineer's permission, has done a 5-1 mix of that album, which is just beautiful to listen to because it was all recorded live in a beautiful old studio, Olympic in London, which is now gone. The studio is still there, but the room is very different than it used to be. And this was a studio where the Who recorded a lot, and the Stones and Traffic and various other bands of that period. It had a wonderful atmosphere and sound. And when you listen to the 5-1, you can hear it. When that happens, I'll make sure that I send you a note and you can announce it. But I think right now the re-release is probably available right now, actually.
You mentioned that the people in Texas took Ronnie to their bosom when he lived here, and that was from 1987 to 1992. For most of us, besides the Small Faces material, we were exposed to Ronnie Lane through the album that you were just talking about, Rough Mix. You also talked earlier that you were not a collaborative songwriter. How much of Rough Mix really was a collaboration, or was it a Pete song, a Ronnie song, a Pete song?
It was the latter. It was a one-on-one off. However, for me, that album was a divine collaboration. I mean, it was the record. It was a very life changing record for me. 1976 was a very, very critical year for me in a whole number of different ways, and a very intense, very packed year. I did a lot of work. I did a lot of stuff with The Who and a lot of stuff, extramural stuff too. And I can remember it was the first time when I realized that Ronnie was getting sick. We had a little argument about something. He accused me of treating my wife very badly and said something a bit indecent about me. And I pushed him or punched him, and he just went flying. And I thought, well, he's a little guy, but God, this is a bit strange. And he really went flying, and I helped him up. And I said, what's up, what's up? And he said, oh, I just lost my balance. And I said, you know, you look like you're drunk. And then I went back, and then somebody else in his circle said to me, you know, we think Ronnie may have MS. And that was the very first time that I realized it was happening. So it was a wonderful time, in a way, to be with him and supporting him and realizing, you know, trying to knock him out in the middle of a row. We were so close. We were the kind of people that we could have stand-up rows, but we would very, very quickly make up. And that's not the case with everybody in my life, I have to say. But, you know, it was a really, really important time for me. I mean, the other thing was that, of course, the record was critically acclaimed. It didn't sell a lot of copies, but it was absolutely critically acclaimed when it came out. So that was really good for both of us, you know, because, you know, I'd never made a solo record. It made me confident that, you know, that I could pursue a solo career. It may also, in a bad way, perhaps from a Who fan's perspective, been the record that sowed the seed of doom for The Who, because I think already by 76 I was running out of ideas as to how to get The Who to move to the next level, if there was one, because we were so busy on the road. We got this reputation for being a hotel room smashing roustabout rock band, which didn't fit in with many of my personal ideas. But, you know, it was, you know, I was in it, I was of it. I'm not denying my role in it, but it was a tricky one, really. And so the reviews made me feel, well, actually, maybe I could do this, you know, maybe I could do solo work as well. And if I can do that as well, then, you know, that'll be good, because maybe then that will give me a way of adjusting to the fact that there are things about the Who recording career, which are not as fulfilling as they used to be in the old days. So that record was very critical for me. And Ronnie's role in it was, you know, was absolutely as a collaborator, you know, without question. You know, he was a true collaborator. We didn't actually write songs together. That was my fault, not his.
6 years later, The Who made its final studio album, It's Hard, up till now. Later this month, you're releasing Endless Wire. You're on the road with The Who right now. How is the new material coming across for you and the audience?
It's going very well. People are being quite kind. The mini opera, the part of the new record, which is I call a mini opera, which is called Wire and Glass, is fairly rocking. So that goes down quite well. But we play a couple of other songs that are really very different. They're almost like folk music, more like Fairport Convention or Bob Dylan or, you know, even Dave Van Ronk than traditional Who songs. And it's just Roger and me on a stage for two of the songs with an acoustic guitar, and Roger sings. And it's all going down very well. And but, you know, the record is a good record. It's a slightly different record. I made it entirely myself at home. You know, I often thought about Ronnie while I was making the record. I often thought about the encouragement that he gave me to work at home and to stick to my guns and to play as much of the music myself as I could. And I did that. And this was a simpler, easier for me to do this time because there is no Who band as such. You know, we have a great band that we tour with, but the Who, if there is a Who nowadays, is definitely Who too. It's definitely just me and Roger. We're a duo now, and everything's very new for us. So I was able to shape the record, you know, using the techniques that I used way back in those days with Ronnie. You know, I worked on an 8-track tape machine. I used computer very, very little. And I'm pleased with the record, and I'm really pleased to be out on the road. I'm really enjoying it. My partner, Rachel, has come with me for the tour. She's not coming just to go shopping. She's working. She's doing a program for Sirius Satellite, which she presents, a Who channel. She's doing plugging her own EP, which is called Shine, which has been released by Barnes & Noble. And so she's doing some Barnes & Noble bookshop appearances. And she's doing a few shows of her own. She did one at the House of Blues here with Rose Hill Drive, and a really great new artist and writer who I'm sure you guys down there would love. There's a young guy called Willie Mason. Have you heard of him?
I have.
Oh, God, he's just... This is a young man. Oh, his songs are wise beyond their years. He's such a towering performer. Where he's going to go with this stuff, I really don't know. And my brother Simon played, and of course Mikey played, and Rachel did a set. So she just does a few shows like that. So I'm happy on the road because I've got my partner, my family. I miss the dogs, I miss my son, and I miss my home. But it's as good as it gets. We're having a really good tour.
We're wrapping up with Pete Townsend. He is talking to us from Chicago. He and The Who will be in Texas, Houston, and Dallas in November. Pete, one of the songs we've been favoring on our radio station is called Tea and Theater. It sounds like something that we could have heard Ronnie doing in the passing show in that DVD.
Yeah, that's right. It does. And Roger does it with such sensitivity on the stage. You know, I hope you'll get to come and hear it. We close our show with that song now, and it's a very moving moment. I think people think it's about us, but it's the closing song from the mini opera. It's about two very old people. They're in their 80s, and one of them is in an old people's home, a sanatorium or whatever you want to call it, and he's not very well mentally, but his ex-partner comes to see him, and they watch a little theater show at the home, and then they have a cup of tea, and that's about the end of the story. It's the epilogue of the story. And but when we play it live, it seems to be about the Who story. It seems to be about Roger and I. And I'm very, very touched that you said that. I mean, like I said, when I was making this record, I thought a lot about Ronnie. I thought a lot about those days, because it's 25 years since we put a record out. And I've done some solo work, but I had to kind of pick up the pieces. I had to pick up where I left off, and where I left off with The Who wasn't very satisfactory, so I had to kind of find some way to link back a little bit further, do you know what I mean, Jody, so that I was kind of back in the years perhaps before the decline, and made that connection, I think. And watching the passing show, as I did before I came out, I have to say the person that I thought really shone out in that was the guy that ran my companies for a while in London, Russ Schlagbaum.
Oh, he was great.
He just loved him. But also towards the end, when you suddenly see, you know, all the people in Austin, you know, playing his music and reviving his memory, you know, this is something I knew nothing about, really, and it was just so great to see. And this is, you know, Ronnie was like a brother to me, and I just hope one day I'm going to get to come and play in Austin. And my girlfriend Rachel did South by Southwest, and I think she wants to do it next year, so maybe I'll come and hang out with her and do something then.
Well, we'd love to see you. The last time The Who played Austin was 1980, in the summer of 1980. We've been talking with Pete Townsend, who's on the road with The Who, coming back to Texas in Houston and Dallas in November, and talking with us about the new DVD about the life of Ronnie Lane, The Passing Show. Pete, it's so nice to know that you were as inspired by that DVD as those of us who've already seen it.
Cool. Yeah, I suppose a lot of you are in it. It's very good. You know, these things sometimes turn out to be sentimental, but it's very good. There wasn't as much about Rough Mix in it as I expected, so it's obviously a very, very rich story. You know, Ronnie had quite a life, didn't he? You know, outside of the Faces, and certainly outside of his time in the UK. When he hit America, he had another life. You know, when his last wife, Susan, talked about going up into the mountains and looking out at the elk and the, you know, whatever it was that they had up there, I just, you know, my eyes filled with tears. I just thought, you know, this is what he needed, you know, sometimes, was just some real peace and quiet. And she was certainly able to give it to him. But he also needed, you know, to have a good time and feel that he was still a musician. And I think that's what you people did for him, made him feel that he still had music as part of his life. It was a really great period for him. And I want to thank you.